PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me once again in the studio, we're getting a big dose of Cobra lately. It's my guy, Master Mike Yagley of Cobra Puma fame. Yags, what's happening?
All sorts of stuff.
You know what you look like right now?
What do I look like?
You look like a champion.
Really?
How does it feel? So Mike has been a part of crushing the, what do you call it, dynasty vibes that were going around on that Team Paradise thing at the Morgan Cup.
Yeah.
Oh, folks, you need to be watching this show. I don't think this is an audio only. We've got the Morgan Cup champion trophy in the office. I'm surprised he's not drinking his morning coffee out of it. He's giving it a little smooch. This is a wild ride.
Let's just start this off right.
You know the best part is, it's like, what is it, like 8, 9 in the morning there?
Yeah.
You're going to be riding that high all day, aren't you?
All day. So, I needed the boost. That was good. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Yeah, no problem. You clearly had it within arm's reach, so it's on your mind daily.
It's nearby at all times. Yeah.
So we had a little bit of a lead-in storyline. Tell all what the Morgan Cup is during our last show with Jose, and I'm not going to tell you whether he was polite or not, because this has that hasn't aired yet, so you have no idea.
I can guess. Yeah,
but I think everyone's got a pretty good grasp of what the Morgan Cup is at this point. It's trying to become a tour player, and you've provided the opportunity with THP for, you know, a handful of THPers every year to just go all the way with your product and then get together and compete against the other team. We don't even want to use their name, but it's, you know, Hackers versus the Paradise. And this year you've won. So tell me about it. How was Briggs?
Briggs was absolutely phenomenal. I tell all my golfing buddies, I'm like, if anybody ever says you want to go to a Dormy Network golf course, before they finish the sentence, you just say yes. And if they say you just say yes. Okay. You want to go to Briggs? Yeah, I want to go. Unbelievable. Huge thanks to Josh and everybody else who helped put that on. It was just flipping amazing. The condition of the course, the amenities, how they treated us. The food was off the rack. The drinks, there might have been a couple of drinks. Yeah, it was just phenomenal. And then all the dudes, I mean, both teams, Hackers and that other team, it was really, really good. It was such a solid event. And I would say to anybody who's even like remotely thinking of signing up for that particular event, for the love of God, do it, man. Because it's a lot of fun. It really is. And it's competitive. I mean, you're grinding. You're really grinding.
This one went to the last hole of the last match, right? To crown the victor.
Yeah.
So it's one of my favorite follows on the forum every year. We have this huge live thread that goes up, and people post thousands of comments in it, whether it's people reacting or people at the event showcasing what's going on and all the crazy stuff. What do you think of the taco truck? Not bad.
Oh, so good. You've been there, Daniel?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Oh my God. And a couple of the guys are like, I'll take two. And the guy looks at him and he goes, they're kind of big, and they're as big as your head. Yeah. And they're so good. Oh my gosh. I went with a taco, and then I got a quesadilla for the guys who were still a little bit hungry. So we break that up into fours or eights or whatever. And it was like perfect. One taco and a little chunk of quesadilla and maybe a cocktail. It was so good.
Well, good for you, my friend. I know it's been eating at you a little bit. Jose's had your number for a couple years now.
Yeah.
One of the things you guys have done over the years is you've had these street signs, which you turn into little pot shots at each other. I don't know if that's continued or not, but are you already thinking about next year? Is there going to be a new one?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a couple really good concepts coming. Oh, yeah.
I think the last time I was present for one, I think there was a handing of a one and two or something like that.
Yeah.
Things have changed.
There was, let's see, just short of first, which was a double pun on that poor little guy. Then there was the record, which was one and three. Then there was a couple other ones. Yeah. But I had to shut my mouth for 4 years. Are you kidding me?
That's asking a lot, isn't it?
And just take it. Well, I'm not as verbose nor as trash talking as he is. Not even close. I mean, I've barely mentioned it since we got in the office, honestly. But now I've got a newfound energy. I might bring it up a couple times this week, even maybe even in a meeting.
Yeah, we'll just take the trophy to lunch one day, you know?
Yeah. I find it's funny. I used to ask the question of the guys, like, do you like winning or hate losing more? Right. And I'm definitely a hate losing. I really hate to lose. And now that we've won, I'm satisfied. I'm not glowing. I'm not gloating. But I do like winning. I just really hate losing. I mean, I hate it. Bob Rotella would say, don't concern yourself with either one, right? Just play the game, work the process, right? And that's what I did over the past several weeks. And it does work. But yeah, I really, really, really hate losing.
It was an incredibly fun follow, and seeing the guys react to the new product's been a lot of fun as well. 2025 is going to look a little different. It's the Morgan Cup All-Star event, which is going to be wild. Yeah. You're going to have the who's who of Cobra fandom in there along with you and Hose.
It's going to be so good.
But it's going to be chaotic because you guys are at Victoria National, which I'm not sure if you're familiar, is an absolute brute of a golf course. So
is it? Oh boy.
Yeah. If you're planning lessons, I'd start now. Because
what aspects of the game should be worked on?
Yes.
For me and for all of our listeners.
Definitely.
What aspect?
Yep.
Oh, I get you. All aspects. Okay. I get the answer. I'm like, I don't think you could. Can you hear me? Dunk, 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 dunk. Can you hear me? Yes. All aspects. Okay. It's that challenging. Because some golf courses awesome. Like, you know, it's tough off the tee, then it gets easier. Some golf courses are like, oh, it's really easy off the tee, then it gets harder. So it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
You will. Okay. You will love it.
Yep.
As a.
Well played.
As a student of life, you will love it. But, you know, I don't want to get too wrapped up in the Morgan Cup. Jose's already had his moment to talk about it. You've had yours. I think what everyone wants who maybe isn't deeply involved in the Morgan Cup at this point is to hear more about your product and being on the innovation side. Let's just skip this year, skip next year. Let's talk 2027. What do you say?
Actually, you've nailed it, because right now we are in the throes of figuring out what 2027 and 2028 are, because 2026 is done. It's baked. Okay. 25 is thoroughly baked. This is just going down one rabbit hole. It's so funny how it works. We have an innovation code name for a product or a concept, and then there is typically a design team code name for the same concept or product. And then there's a commercial name. So there could be three or actually more distinct names for a product. So this time of year in our heads, there is the 2025 product that's coming out and the code name we used for that.
Can I guess?
And then there's the 26. What's that?
Can I guess what the code name was?
Yeah. Yeah.
Apollo.
You know, I'll give you a theme. No, that's a, no, that, by the way, do you see it back there?
I do, yeah.
Yes, there it is. That is my Lego Apollo that my kids and I did years ago. And when it became the code name for the limited irons, I'm like, that's mine, kids. I'm taking it in the office. So I have a whole bunch of aerospace stuff back here.
Because
I am
sweet.
A nerd. Yeah. So remind me to tell you a story about that one, too.
Okay.
So
let me write that down.
I'll give you a genre, because we have genres. We have, there was national parks, there was supermodels, there was video game characters. This particular series for the past couple of years has been Fast and Furious. So,
really?
Yep. Yeah. Do you have any Fast and Furious characters running around in your head?
Well, like the actual characters' names? Or,
you know,
the,
it's funny, what? We mixed them. We did mix them. We mixed names of the characters and actual names of the actors.
Oh, okay. So it's not like the cars or anything like that. It's just the names. So you get like the Vin Diesel. You got the Dominic Toretto.
There was
Toretto. The Paul Walker.
It took you three. That was it.
Walker. So so you got the last name mostly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mostly, we typically go with like one name. So we use Toretto. We use Walker. We use Mia. I'm trying to think of what else we used. There were several others that we used.
Brian, the code name Brian.
There was no Brian. Life of Brian. That could be a Monty Python. Yeah, there the you Life go. Of Brian.
Okay. That's got to be wild to go. Like, so, I'm sure for some of these, which actually have like interesting, exciting names, you become a little bit married to it, don't you?
You do, absolutely. The next series is Star Wars, so there's going to be some love there. Oh yeah, absolute love there. So anyway, back what I was saying is like, so this time of year, I literally have like 3 or 4 code names running around in my head. So as I'm talking to you, there'll be times I might say the code name as opposed to the actual product name. Okay. It's just how it goes. It's super fun though. So anyway, back to your question, it was 2027, I believe you asked about.
Yeah. Why not?
Let's see, what would I allude to? Well, let me ask you this, right? What is a performance attribute that you think that Cobra should go after?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because mm-hmm. during the chat with Jose, I mentioned that there was a true focus from my end, or at least the way I perceived it going through all the videos and experience of product, there was a true arrow focus that mm-hmm. has existed for a long time with you guys. And I was curious as to whether you'd start to take another avenue, not that you'd like throw that out the window, but start to focus on other things. So we've had speed both from an arrow perspective and also from a face perspective. It's kind of mm-hmm. like, okay, what's the next one? There's always a discussion about forgiveness around the face. And,
yes.
you know, I yeah. think the limited irons were, I would argue, the forefront of that conversation because you're getting more with less. And yes. I think a lot of what has been exciting about what companies are doing, specifically those examples, is you're creating more with less of a footprint. And I think that's the most exciting thing. So circular, I would say that, but I don't know.
That's a really good one. Yeah. Okay. That is a good one without going. If anybody's watching now, you can see kind of a grin show up on my face. Like, that is a really, really good one.
More with less?
More with less, yeah. Okay. You touched on the ways you can develop speed. So let's talk about that for a second. Okay. Mm-hmm. And just going to get nerdy for just a couple minutes here. Number one, and let's stick with drivers. Okay. Cause it's the, you know, it's the cool club. It's the sexy thing that everybody likes to talk about. Aerodynamics is a big deal. I've been quoted several times over the past decade and a half saying, you know, I don't know how important aerodynamics are. And then as we started diving into it, I'm a freaking aerodynamicist, right? I'm like, found out that the amount of energy, we'll call it work. It's work, okay? Required to get the club from the top of the swing to impact. What percentage of that do you think is aerodynamic forces or work? Because it would just be the force over a distance and time, right? Or versus just moving the mass, right? Because it's a pretty big mass. So what's the ratio between there's aerodynamic work and moving the mass work? What do you think that, how much of it's aerodynamic?
Man.
I'll give you a clue. It's not much.
I was going to say, I don't really have a number. What was that? What was that like?
Say that when, for the people that are listening, you're going to sound really smart.
3%?
Okay, just, yeah, very good, Daniel.
Thank you.
It's about 3%.
Yeah, what I want to know is what is that first meeting like when you get in there and they start talking about aero and you're sitting in the back, you're like, I have an idea.
That is what it's like. That's totally what it's like. It's the nerd in the back of the room. I think I got something. I got an idea here. So
3%.
It's 3%, right? And then when I did the math, I'm like, well, hell, if you could reduce that by 40-50%, because it's always fun to dream, right? Well, that's a pretty big chunk of work required that could be turned into more club head speed if you could reduce that drag. And as we got into it, we're like, crap, we actually can do this. And you've heard the stories. It's softening the leading edge. And the leading edge to me on a wing is like literally the leading edge, but the leading edge on a golf club, you got this big bluff face. It's all around the face, the sole area, the crown, heel and toe, just softening that edge so that you've got a good balance of streamlining it, but you still have the resilience you need from that structure. Because if you make it too curved, you really reduce the amount of resilience because it's now that the whole thing just becomes too stiff. Because a curved surface is relatively stiff compared to a flat one at impact. So you soften that up, you raise the trailing edge a little, you soften all the areas. This is my buddies now, Hose and T.O. both give me crap for this word, excrescence, okay? Excrescence drag. When I was at Boeing, before Boeing became a four-letter word, I worked in the 737 and 757 production support. Really freaking cool job. And our job was to make sure that if somebody did a repair on an airplane or if they were doing some sort of work on the airplane, that it was still, it was buttoned up and it wasn't going to cause a lot of drag and certainly not a safety issue. So I worked on making sure that there were no little steps on the airplane between flaps and any, like I said, any sort of repairs, all of the fairings around the engine, everything. So no steps, no voids, no channels, no nothing. Dan, I'm not kidding you. A step about an eighth of an inch high and maybe 2 feet long, which is not going to cause a safety concern, but it's going to increase the drag, could be worth, crap, $500,000 or $1 million of fuel over the life of the airplane. So we worked really hard to make sure that you reduce the drag immensely. So I took that and I went, all right, with a golf club head, you want to make sure there aren't any steps and voids, and especially forward-facing steps. You don't want something that's facing the wind. If it's an aft-facing step, that's not near, it's like almost invisible. So we literally took a head and we filled in every nook and cranny, including the hosel sleeve port, all of the weights, any steps, we basically bondoed or filled it with clay. And in miles an hour, now granted, in my world, a little bit is a lot. How much do you think the excrescence, when reduced, increased the club head speed at 120 miles an hour?
Let's go.
It's not that big, but it's 10%. Measurable. No, I wish it was 10%. No, excrescence drag is a small thing. It was like a half a mile an hour, which is...
I meant 0.5%.
Yeah, there you go. Our world, Daniel, if we can find a little bit, and we call this aggregate incrementalism, okay? So if you can find a little something, right? A little speed, a little spin, a little launch angle, and you add it up, it's like, this club's a lot longer. And it might be because of five things. But in this case, reducing that excrescence drag was a measurable thing. So we've streamlined the crap out of it, reduced the excrescence drag, and we've got ourselves a really, really, when I say aerodynamic, that's a relative term because as you look at these heads, it's still a great big blunt body coming at you. And this is a crappy aerodynamic device.
Well, that's the challenge, right? Yeah. I think I'm hoping that it's not just 1 + 1 = 2 here, where if you change the drag to improve it, you can also change the way the ability for golfers to square the club head up as you drive through the zone and, you know, not have the club working against you, which... it's a lot easier to see with like a toe hang and a putter, but for a driver, like if you can't square it up, then, you know, challenges exist. And weight placement obviously plays a big role as well, but
it does, man. I am so excited to talk to you 2 years from now about the ship. Right now.
You know, it's funny because when we plan this show, it's like, hey, you got new irons coming out. Let's talk drivers.
Yeah. So let's continue down that rabbit hole. So We do everything we can to give you as much club head speed as possible. But then, once you get the club to the ball, there's a couple different things you really want to focus on. One would be the mass properties. Well, actually, the loft and the lie angle. You got to make sure the face is pointed in the right direction, okay? And our ability to give you something to make sure that that head is pointing in the right direction is massive. And I want people to remember that statement, okay? Getting the face pointed in the right direction is massive. I want you to remember that when it comes to our 2025 product. Okay.
Okay. Now let's
continue. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's the club head speed and where is the face pointed? 1 and 2. Okay. Then once the ball's on the face, you've got the mass properties. Get the CG in the right location so that you get the most speed, the right amount of spin. Cause some people need more spin, right? Most people need less spin. And then you've got the resilience properties. The head actually, as we know now, it does flex. And you get more ball speed because the face and really the whole head is flexing, but let's look at the face. And you're transferring more energy to the ball because the head's absorbing some of it. And the head is actually giving the ball more speed than if that head were totally rigid. I mean, people use the word trampoline. It's a pretty decent analogy. So club head speed through aerodynamics, ball speed from good mass properties, ball speed from the resilience of that structure. Those are the three things that are giving you speed. And of course, as I said before, make sure the face is pointed in the right direction. So that's where it's all coming from. So that's a big playground, Daniel. Sure, we've done a lot of work aerodynamically, but there's a lot more work that can be done combining all three of those.
We've seen weight changes from the top of the head to the bottom of the head, which has played a pretty big role. And you're talking about mass location and driver is a lot easier. Let's try and dial this into irons a little bit, because with irons, it's a lot harder to move any weight, right? And I think limited has proven that structure and stability can exist without a ton of mass in a certain area, but the challenge exists with is it an easy enough product to produce, which obviously you're at the front of that story, not the end of it. So currently not as easy, I would assume.
You are correct. But as every day, okay, day is an exaggeration. We'll say month. For sure a year, okay, passes, it gets easier. Now I'm putting that for the people who are listening, I'm putting an annoying air quotes, right?
Yeah.
It gets easier. Well, because honestly, making these things are not easy. But you, in 30 seconds, you covered the whole gambit of what that thing is without going, like you took the executive summary. Yeah. Which is, it's really hard to find weight or mass savings, right? And where do you put it? What do you do with it? And how do you make that structure still behave as if that mass is still there? Because a blade like iron, which is what this limited looks like, right? When you look down, is it as small as an MB? No. But it's smaller than a King Tour. And the King Tour is played by tour players. So that's a damn good shape, and they really like it. And we snugged it up a little bit. And look down at, you're like, okay, that's a blade. But then you alluded to it, like, okay, what's really on the inside? And we 3D printed it. It has a lattice structure on the inside, which, if people have not heard this story, stay seated, okay, on a 275 or 80 gram head. We found 100 grams, 100 freaking grams. You know, when engineers hear it, they're like, what? You did what? Yeah. But here's the beauty of it. That lattice on the inside touches everything on the inside. So it touches the back of the face. It touches the front of the back. It touches all the walls. So it still feels like a solid chunk of metal. Because at the loads you're hitting it, it's not like super high loads. So it behaves and feels like a blade, even though it has a very lightweight lattice structure on the inside. So that's where you find these 100 grams. You put it in tungsten, low and wide. Now you've dropped the CG down. You've increased the moment of inertia. All these terms of people that are listening, that I've heard this before. Yeah, but you haven't heard it like this. I really encourage people to go hit this thing. It is, at times, a one-shot wonder for some players. I guarantee after like five, you'd be like, what is this thing? I've coined the term paradoxical reaction. It's the moment where a guy or gal goes, it looks like a blade, feels like a blade, but when I hit it thin around the toe or in the heel, it still goes. I didn't lose 20 yards. What the hell is this thing?
Yeah.
It's freaking phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things I had on my list to talk to you, and I'm determined to actually get a couple of these marked off so I don't have to make you record like six or seven episodes with me. But it actually plays into the conversation, because the last time you were on, I thought it'd be interesting to see what has changed, I think, in the last 6 months or so with 3D printing. How much has that changed? I feel like that'd be a very fast-moving industry.
It is. I keep using the analogy. It's kind of like a television. You know, those guys who had the flat-screen plasma TV on their wall about 15 years ago that cost literally $15,000 or $10,000, and now you can buy something even better at Costco for $1,000. It's the same thing. I mean, if we had tried to commercialize this set 10 years ago, we could have done it, but it would have taken a lot of work. I'm guessing for us to get a decent margin, for the retailer to get a decent margin, the set would have cost like $15,000. I'm not even making that up. And so now here we are. It's a $3,000 set of irons. And that has happened because the world has looked at it and said, okay, we can create shapes that cannot be created through casting, forging, machining. We can do things that, but those are real complex shapes. We can do one-off things like rocket nozzles and fuel mixers for F1 and Indy cars, just real exotic stuff. So that's what drove it, like the possibilities. But then people looked at it and said, wait a minute, we want to be able to mass produce these things. It's one thing to make a rocket nozzle to cost $50,000 or $100,000, but how can we make parts en masse? And that has happened really quickly. Like in the past just couple of years, you've gone from machines that would cost $2 million to that machine now costing like $500,000. It has more capacity. It's faster. It's production ready. And there's a lot of these machines now. So it has gotten, I would say, affordable and mass producible, this process of 3D printing metal, very, very quickly. Faster than we even imagined 10 years ago. We thought, oh, shit, it's going to be 20 years. No, it happened in less than 10.
So tell me, in a perfect world, assuming that the price comes down to a more realistic, like, inline comparison to what an iron spec should or would be in your normal run, like, let's say, for example, these awesome new King Tech irons, is it in a perfect world for you to 3D print everything?
That's a great question. There are some companies out there, and you can find them. People Google them, you can find them, that claim they will get the cost of making a metal piece to that of casting and forging. If that really happens, then yeah, potentially that could be the way of the future. I don't know that they'll get there, but just having that as a target is a noble thing and awesome. Let's say they're half right. If they're half right, the cost of this comes way down and it makes it more affordable for players. You know, does it get to that of casting and forging? Maybe not. But the performance value, even right now, I mean, people are paying $3,000 for the set of irons and they come back going, holy crap, this is the best set of irons I've ever hit. When you surf the internet, there's many, many people who evaluate clubs either hitting them personally or with a robot. And they're like, this might be the best iron ever made. So if we can get that cost down even more, which I believe we will, and make it more affordable and more available to players, I think it'll get close. You asked originally, like, would it replace it? I don't know that it'll replace it. I don't know that it really will. Because there's some things that's just not worth 3D printing. If you're going to make a forged blade and it's solid and the player really wants that, they don't need the other stuff that I'm talking about, I probably wouldn't print that. But when it comes to complex shapes, especially anything with internal structures that you want to be part of the parent metal, part of the actual, you know, process of making it, then 3D printing is phenomenal. Long-winded answer to, it'll be close.
No, it'll be close. I think it deserves a long-winded answer because you're exploring. I mean, it's not like this is a technology that's been experienced before. It's all fairly, fairly like what's next sort of vibe to it. So, you know, totally. I don't think it's unrealistic to answer long-winded. It's just fascinating because in a lot of ways you end up working against yourself because you have these great technologies that you're utilizing. I mean, you know, walking through the King Tech irons on our homepage, you can see there's a lot of great stuff going on there and carrying on a name that's been very successful. But do you ever feel like you're fighting against yourself, like cost not being considered?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm looking out at our group right now, and 2 years ago, when we said we're going to 3D print some stuff and we think we can commercialize it, you had a whole bunch of people said, no way in hell. So it's not just fighting against myself. It's fighting against like people in the building. Like, no, it's too expensive, too hard. No way, no way, no way. And that was actually one of my favorite moments. I have several favorite moments, of course, in my working life. And one of my favorites was with Dan Ladd and a bunch of guys who will not be named, T.O., Jose, maybe a few others, who were like, man, I just don't think we can make this iron. It's going to be too expensive, too hard, blah, 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 blah. And I'm sitting there going, are you shitting me? Have you hit this thing? Have you hit it? Okay. And we're in a meeting and they're like, they're all like, I don't know. And I said, let me go get Dan for just a second. So I go grab Dan Ladd and I said, Dan, I just need you for like 2 minutes. I bring him into the room and I go, hey, Dan, tell him what we're going to do with that iron. And he goes, we're going to commercialize it. And he walks out. And I'm like, there you go. We're doing this. Okay. It was awesome. So yeah, there's some of that fighting. But now those same people who are like, I don't know, it's in all of their bags, all of them, right? They're all playing it.
That's so
funny. We have a bunch of converts. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. And it's sort of gotten a life of its own. It went from like the unobtainium to then suddenly people are hitting it and they're like, you need to own this iron. And then, you know, the life cycle, I really appreciate you guys bringing out, what did you call it? Series two or a secondary drop of it, which was great. That tells me it did well the first time. It seems quite good.
It did. It was funny. We had an allocation for our e-commerce group, right? Because we got to respect all the channels. So we had a bunch that went to regular retail and then some that were held for e-commerce. And I think it was June 7th was the day we sold them. And we had the 6 a.m. unlock, but then we had some VIPs that had access at like 5:30. And I can't remember what the criteria was to be a VIP, but there were some people who had access at 5:30 a.m. And by 5:33, all of the available 3D printed irons for e-com plus 60%, so 160% of the allocation had been sold by 5:33 a.m.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was nuts. It was absolutely nuts. I remember calling him at like 5:45 a.m. because I knew he was up. Ian Barrett, who runs our e-commerce business, said, what do you think? And he goes, I think we got some pissed off customers, which was a bummer. But that's why we printed more, right? We just had to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's focus a little bit on what's new since we're, you know, celebrating these crazy technologies and as we should with what your role is. But, you know, I think people are really curious about your perspective on KingTech and KingTech X, which are recently released. Are you excited about them?
Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah, there is. You know, it's funny not to be a homer, but I am a homer, of course. I'm excited about all of our products because I know what we put into them. I know how much passion, effort, engineering, science, love gets put into every one of these products in relation to the consumer that they're made for, right? Mm-hmm. If someone is looking for a great feeling player's distance iron, right, that tech is freaking phenomenal. I mean, I said the term paradoxical reaction. Consumers have that with like almost all of our products, like, oh shit, I didn't know it was this good, right? Some of it is I'd never considered Cobra before. And so I hit it and like, wow, it's really good. And then if someone wants a little extra distance, a little extra pop, right? That ForgeTech X, same thing. They're going to hit it and go, whoa. When you hit it versus the consideration set or the competitive set, I encourage anybody who's listening, it's like, okay, if you're going to go try a player's distance iron, grab one of those Cobra irons and just put it in the mix. Just hit it. Just give it a shot. Pun intended. Okay. I really like our chances when we stack it up against the competition. Because we'll throw out aerodynamics, not important, okay, with an iron, but the generating ball speed, generating appropriate spin and launch angle. In this case, also feeling good, also looking good. Okay, because we spend a lot of time on how the products look, a lot of time. Okay, I pick a Cobra club and go hit it versus competition. I have no problem saying you're going to like it.
So, I'm curious about Tech X because you know King Tech seems like a wonderful evolution of something we've seen before, but Tech X seems to be like that secondary move to really support the guys who are looking for some extra distance or looking for some extra support in their swing, but want the opportunity to play something a little bit less bulky, a little bit less game improvement-y, if you'll afford me that word.
We use that word. It's a real word. Oh, yeah.
Is that sort of that connector piece there between your typical big iron run and then something that promotes a little bit more of that player's distance profile?
Yeah. You know, let's say they don't want to go all the way to a true game improvement iron, right? Like the dark speed. It's a little bigger, right? A little thicker top line. Doesn't look as blade-ish, if that's right. Using another word that isn't a word.
Generously applying, yeah. Golf talk.
Yes. It's that sweet spot. You know, and they're a little more expensive, right? Because there's a lot of tech in there. Mm. Heck, hence the name, right? And that's exactly where it is. And that's exactly what it does. I mean, there have been over the past 2 years with the previous Tech X, and now we're going to hear it again with the Tech X. You hear all sorts of fitters, non-Cobra fitters. I'm talking about like retailers that, like, when you talk to them, they're brutally honest, which I love because as an engineer, I have no feelings. I just want you to tell me the truth, right? And they will say the truth is, like, nothing could beat it from a ball speed standpoint. And if someone was truly looking for distance and they you know, they were a game improvement E sort of player, the Tech X was the one that would hand to them and go, here, hit this thing. And it would pretty much kick everybody's butt. And the consumer was really happy with it. So that's the one where there's a lot of times we have this saying, it's like, don't screw it up, right? You've got a really, really good club. Like, okay, you can make some improvements, you know, nip, tuck, find a little more mass. Just don't screw it up. And that was one of those don't screw it up clubs.
So one of the things I think is really interesting about the two between King Tech and King Tech X is that the King Tech has the face, which is clearly bonded on the perimeter, but then it has a rolled undercarriage, so it like wraps underneath and connects. And I don't think the X has that. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So how much of an impact, and from a design standpoint, that's got to be challenging from a sound profile, but also from a performance profile lower on the head, right?
Yeah. That, as we call it, a return on the lower surface, as you described, that gives you just a little bit more flex because of that, because it's one structure. Mm-hmm. It's not welded, a flat plate welded into the face. You mentioned it from a design, and it's design. And now, and I didn't mention this before when I was talking about aerodynamics and mass properties and resilience, right? There's also manufacturability and design, right? So let's even put design before manufacturability. So you've got all these things you're trying to make a great golf club with and for, but then you got to be able to make it. And putting that face on and making sure that it looks good, there's all sorts of crazy ass things that happen, right? It's two different materials. You're welding it. You don't want things like, they call it a weld shadow, where you finish the head, you're like, I can see where it was welded. That's not cool. They have to be able to polish it to the right shape. They have to be able to chrome it. So all these things that we have to think about so the consumer doesn't think about it, doesn't see it. So you're right. From a design, a development, and a manufacturing standpoint, that can get really complicated. We'll invent something in innovation, and we try and make enough of them so that we can understand, okay, is it producible? But that can be tricky. We've made 5 of them. Now we have to make 10,000 of them. It's sure. A big deal. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You nailed one of them. That is a huge deal to be able to put that on the iron.
Yeah, so part of the that spun or spurred the idea that I was curious about in making concessions when you design something. It's almost like a net cost. Like, clearly a decision was made to separate the two from a design standpoint, to have one with that undercarriage and the other one more of a closer two-face weld. So, like, one of the things I've always been really curious about is, as you get hyper creative and as you think of these new ways and new challenging ways to promote certain things that a club should do, like launch or ball speed or something like that that you're focused on? Is it a net loss for other pieces of it? And is it challenging to not have too much of a net loss of something?
That's a great question. I'm scanning through a bunch of products. And yeah, so the answer is yes. As you are considering the multifaceted optimization, which would be the mass properties, including just overall weight. So mass properties, resilience properties, durability, sound, which is feel, right? Cost of manufacturing. I've always equated it to as kind of like a water balloon. You're holding this thing and you squeeze it and you think, oh, I'm going to compress this, and then something sticks out somewhere else, right? And the same is true with the process of optimizing something. If I, again, getting nerdy, if you look at what an airplane, not look at, imagine what an airplane would look like if it was being designed by a mechanical engineer only thinking of stress and failure. The wing would be this huge I-beam that would never fail and aerodynamically would never get off the ground. If it was designed by a propulsion guy, it'd have these huge freaking engines on it to get it off the ground and it would never fly. If it was designed by an aerodynamicist, it would have this really, really thin wing that was just beautiful, really aerodynamic, gives you lots of lift, low drag, no room for fuel. So you couldn't go anywhere. So we have the same thing going on from a golf club standpoint. If you design for feel, it's probably not going to be very fast. If you design only for speed, probably not going to sound great. If you design only for mass properties, it's probably going to be huge. So you have to consider all of those facets simultaneously and make a good-looking, good-sounding, fast, great mass property, won't break sort of golf club. So I got one more thing to say about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is a fun one. It must have been 8 years ago now. We took the problem I just described, which was with the driver, aerodynamics, mass properties, resilience, durability, weight, and cost to NASA, because I knew some buddies there. And we threw a disassembled golf club head on the table, told them what we had to do to make this thing work. And they literally said, yeah, that's too hard. We can't help you. I'm not shitting you, right? And I get afterwards, I'm like, yeah, because that's not the problem they're dealing with. They're dealing with a massive thing they're trying to get up in space, and it's got to do certain things. They're not dealing with a relatively lightweight, super durable, has to absorb 3,000 Gs, has to sound this way. That's just not the stuff they're working on. So it's just different. But for them, like, they literally said, yeah, that's too hard. It was super funny.
I'm really stuck on the water balloon comment, because I've seen a lot of presentations for golf clubs that showcase the stress that a certain part of the club has when contact is made. And you need to have the right sort of reactionary components to support that stress, to not lose inertia or lose power, which I thought was a really interesting point. Cause when you squeeze a water balloon, obviously part of that balloon will give to make concessions for where it's losing. So, me, that seemed like a really interesting comparison. Obviously, a massive contrast to what we're talking about, because we're talking about steel.
Yeah.
But I have to think that as you design things and as subtle changes make, you have to either bolster or adjust the other components of the club to accommodate and make sure that that stress is shared as opposed to isolated into certain areas to avoid hot spots or dead zones or something like that.
Yeah, you nailed it. Here's a great example. Let's take a weight. Okay. So literally, let's say we've got a 12-gram weight that is movable. So you can switch it between a 12 and a 3-gram. And sometimes we have, multiple ports on the head. Okay. And you put the 12-gram weight in we'll call it the skirt or the back end of the club. So you've got a relatively stiff structure with a lot of curvature to it. There's a lot of titanium back there. So it's relatively easy to hold the weight in that location. You take that same weight and put it in the middle of the sole because you want to drive the CG down and forward. And now you put it on a relatively flat surface that's not super stiff, and that weight will cause that, we'll call it like a drum head or a diaphragm, to vibrate a lot easier. I mean, a lot easier. And the frequency, since it's easier to vibrate, the frequency goes down and the volume goes up. And suddenly you've made what was a pretty good sounding driver sound absolutely horrible. As if you've taken a baseball bat to an aluminum garbage can. It's just bad. So then you have to put stiffening ribs around that weight port. And if people were to, you know, there's all sorts of pictures now on the internet, and you could find it. You can see it in our diagrams of our heads, right? You'll see these stiffening ribs around that weight port. And that's why that's there. It's not, it's there somewhat to hold the weight because, like I said, it's 3,000 Gs. If you just bolted the weight literally to a titanium shell, it will rip out in one swing. Okay. You make a weight port for it, and now it'll hold it, but it's going to sound bad. You put the ribs in to stiffen that whole thing up, the frequency goes up, the volume goes down, and it sounds good. There's a weight penalty associated with that. You've just taken a couple grams to make this thing stiff enough to hold that weight. So therein lies the conundrum of, okay, we want the adjustability, but we need the sound, we need the durability. You nailed it, Daniel, when you said, hey, there's trades. Things happen when you move stuff around. And that's a great example of it.
One of the things that we didn't talk about today was something floating around on the conforming list. And I have a feeling when something goes live, I'm going to have to get you back on to talk more about some of these big innovations you guys have done for 2025. I'm not going to put you on the hot seat on that one, generously, because I think you do have a fairly hard stop here soon. But one thing that one of the things I wanted to wrap up with is you've seen the beautiful DBM finish that's on the King Tour, King CB, King MB. We've seen different finishes. We've seen a beautiful copper finish. Is it fun for you in innovation? Actually, I have two questions for that. As an innovator, you see these things come to life in different visuals. That's got to be pretty exciting. But secondary to that, are you involved at all in picking finishes or selecting what a club should look like post?
A little, for me personally, a little bit. I sit on the design reviews and they'll ask me occasionally, hey, what do you think? Most of the time it's like the designers are like, they know what they're going to do. Where my team is involved is the investigation, the discovery, investigation, and like preliminary analysis of some of these finishes. Every year they'll ask us, hey, have you got anything new? And a lot of times we'll show them something that's a little new, or we'll show them stuff they've seen like for the past 7 years, but they didn't pick it. So my team is, and Mike McDonald is our development engineer in the innovation team. And he quite frequently is asked, hey, what have you got new from, especially with the irons, new finishes for the irons. And there's a lot of really cool stuff out there. Some of it's really expensive. Cost prohibitive. We'd have to raise the price of each iron by like literally $50 just to put it on there. Wow. But it looks pretty bitchin'. And as the price of those things come down, the cost of those things come down, you might see more of them. So yeah, I would say most of our involvement is in the discovery, initial investigation, a little bit of development work so that it's an option for the design team.
So what stops you guys from doing, let's say, limited runs like you would with a driver head, as opposed to almost a re-release, if you will? You mentioned cost being a problem, but, you know, limited comes with a cost, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I would say that's one of them. You do see some, that you're right, they're not limited, but they're like special runs. Like we're going to do some... You might see some unfinished metal products from us without saying anything more, right?
Okay.
In the fairly near future.
Let me ask you one more question about the iron finishes, because DBM is fundamentally one of the best dark finishes that it's we've ever
phenomenal.
Seen, right?
Just and phenomenal. Yeah.
The durability discussion is always brought up. How important is that to your team to have your irons look good for their life cycle as opposed to right out of the plastic?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. And it's not just life cycle too. It's like, especially with the irons you just mentioned, they have to be bendable too, because an awful lot of irons get, you know, custom made. And so they've bent the lie angle, might've tweaked the loft a little bit. Bending an iron such that one, it is bendable. Two, it doesn't mar or scratch, or the finish doesn't break when you do it, because you can get little cracks in the finish. That's a huge deal for us. Huge. And my team is heavily involved in that. It's like, okay, so we've got this new, a new alloy. We've got a new finish on it. Is it bendable? That's like one of the first questions that's asked by most of the team. Hey, can you bend it? Yeah, it's a huge deal. And then on top of it, like you said, through its life cycle. I mean, there are expectations for irons. You know, I'm out there playing on a, you know, pretty benign surface. It's grass. You know, there's not a lot of debris. I expect that thing to hold up. I'm in the bunker a lot. The expectations are a little lower, okay? Because that's rocks. Those are little bitty rocks that are in between the ball and the club face.
You can't expect all of Florida, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, my friend. It's always an adventure getting you on here. You have such great insight for us. And I feel like you present it better as a champion. I don't know what it is about you. It just seems to flow easier.
Thank you, Daniel.
It's almost like there's a weight been lifted off your shoulders.
A little bit. Yeah, there's a little skip in the step. Yeah, I think I'm a little taller.
Mm-hmm. do you have anything you want to add or share with the group or heckle me about before we wrap up?
No, but I got to go through the team, right? T. Wright, 971, C. Baker, C. A. Golfer, E. Appleton, 1, Iniok, Jeff G. 21. Dude, you were a hell of a partner. Hell of a partner. I really, and of course, JB, right?
I was wondering if you'd leave him out. It was kind of lingering.
I could leave him out. I could leave him out. Yeah. That was a really, really fun time. I really appreciate what they did. And all of them, right? So you get Golf Fest, Lib, Sleep Please, Marmel, Wonger, Red, and JD Tox, I can say it. What they did to make that event happen, because they had to do a lot. They had to sacrifice. They had to practice. They had to, you know, work out their family schedules. To make that event what it was huge for me. And I really appreciate everything they did, the stuff that I know they had to do and the other stuff that I don't know they had to do to make that happen. It was phenomenal. And then last thoughts, it's like, yeah, like I said before, people just give Cobra. I'm not even begging. I'm just telling you, it's a fact. Give it a shot. Pun intended. Give Cobra a shot.
So new and, King Tech irons, put them up against anyone, see what you think.
Yeah. And those categories, hell yes. They're freaking phenomenal. They're going to go, whoa, these feel good. They look good. The dark stuff, especially, they look smaller. And I would say don't get freaked out by size, okay? Because we've seen it time and time again. It also breeds more confidence, right? Just looks good. Feels good. And they will perform. I guarantee it.
You are the master.
Yeah, just one of the guys.
I appreciate you, buddy.
You too. Thanks, Daniel.
Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. If you haven't spent much time with Cobra, you really should. They're doing great things there. They're clearly at the forefront of innovation. And if you don't, I mean, Yagley's going to come get you. He's going to get that close visual on the screen. He's going to come let you know you're doing it wrong.
I'm going to find you. Yes.
I can't wait to talk to you about 2025 stuff. It looks great.
So excited.
So we'll get you back on then. All right, my friend.
All right. Take care.
All right, everyone out there. Have a great week. We'll see you next one.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.